Welcome to Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Weldon. Today's story is the last two chapters of The Wilderwood, Book 2, a fantasy serial co-written for you by Daniel Hines and Joseph Montebello. Make sure you've listened to all the previous episodes so you'll be caught up. Today, we'd like to say a special thank you to Matthias and his kitties, Rasmus and Chase, and the rest of their family in Riedstadt, Germany, Ian and Julian Lubert and their family in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, Simon and Max Shaper and their family, Quinn and Baxter and their family in Seattle, Barrett and Ebba and their family, and Isabella Flanagan and her dog Pepe and their family in Spokane, Washington. Thank you so much, Pepe, Isabella, Ebba, Barrett, Baxter, Quinn, Max, Simon, Julian, Ian, Chase, Rasmus, and Matthias. You are part of what makes it possible for us to continue to produce fun new stories for our listeners. If you would like to support Stories Podcast and get every episode ad-free, head over to patreon.com/stories and join for just $1 a month. If you'd like access to all of our ebooks or to receive a thank you in a future episode, that's also available at patreon.com/stories. We have new Stories Podcast face masks available. Check those out, plus all of our other merch at storiespodcast.com/shop. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Stories Podcast. If you send us a drawing of your favorite scene or character, we'll share it on our feed. Now here's a word from our sponsors. When you want something done right, you go to the experts. That's why, if your child is struggling in math, you go to Mathnasium. They're the authority on math education. It's all they teach, and they're experts at it.
My daughter Grace is 11 now, and when she needs help with her math homework, I'm not always able to do it. Math was never my best subject, and plus they do everything different now. But I don't want her to fall behind, so I set her up with a free consultation with Mathnasium. There are over 1,000 of their centers across the country, and one near me too, but Gracie did her session online because that works better for us right now. Her instructors were knowledgeable and patient and explained things to her in a way that really helped her understand. They did a full evaluation of Gracie's strengths and needs, and now they can make sure to get her the exact right support.
Mathnasium works with kids in grades 2 through 12, and what they teach goes above and beyond math. Kids learn to think critically and problem solve and gain confidence in their overall abilities. Plus, they never assign homework, but they will help your kid with their homework from school so you don't have to relearn how to multiply fractions or find the diameter of a circle.
What a relief!
Whether you're looking to get your kid back on track or want to ensure they're staying ahead with their math studies, schedule a free consultation with Mathnasium today. You can find a center near you at mathnasium.com, then call them for a free in-person or online consultation.
Hey, grown-ups.
On the Nintendo Switch system, there's so many worlds you can explore.
Like Hyrule, where I can fight enemies and save the kingdom with Link.
That sounds adventurous!
Or my very own island in Animal Crossing New Horizons, where I can fish whenever I want.
Whoa! Look at the size of that thing! You can find even more worlds to explore on the Nintendo Switch system. Games rated E to E10+. Games and systems sold separately.
Thanks! Enjoy the episode! The Wilderwood, Book 2, Chapter 5. Lachlan felt strange without his armor. He usually took it off only to sleep, but for Nezzy's plan to work, they had to be quiet. Armor was great in a fight, but it always seemed to loudly clank at the wrong time. Gothak had helped him bundle it up in the role of dried thunderbeast hide, wrapped so tightly that it didn't make a sound, even when the half-giant shook it vigorously. Lachlan had strapped it on his back. It was heavy, but at least he knew it wouldn't give them all away. "Are we getting close?" Harks asked. "I haven't done this much walking since, well, ever, really." They'd been traveling slowly, trudging through mud for much of the morning. Wax and Gothak were in front, following the trail, with Harks in the middle. Lachlan was trying to keep to himself, still fuming from the missed bow shots and his failed shield spell, but Nezzy kept dropping back to try and get him talking.
"It's a good thing Gothak got us something to eat," she said. "Who knows how long we'll be on the trail?"
Lachlan tried a smile, but it must not have been convincing. Nezzy looked at him, concerned.
"You almost got that musk raptor. I've heard they taste good, as long as you don't rupture their stink organ."
Lachlan shook his head. "I missed that bird by a mile, just like I missed the shot that could have cut the cart loose."
"Well, that was a long shot, Nuzzy said. You did the best you could, right? You can't dwell only on the bad. That's no help to anyone.
Yes, but if I'd hit the shot at the cart, those little Frosker might be free right now. But that's not the worst thing.
Well, what is the worst thing?
The shield. When the Okar threw those spears, I tried to use Orlam's shield.
That was magic, right? I didn't know that you knew any magic.
All types of magic are different. Harx's power comes from within herself. You draw your power from nature. Well, a paladin's magic comes from their faith. Mine comes from my belief in the rightness of Orlam's teachings. Nezzy nodded in understanding. That spell. I've probably done it 100 times. My teacher said I was one of the better squires when it came to faith in Orlam's power. In training, I could stop arrows easily. But this time, when we were in danger, I couldn't do it. One spear hit and my faith fell apart.
He felt like such a failure. He couldn't even seem to help his new friends.
I wanted to make the shot. I wanted to protect you. I want to be a leader like Orlam, like Sir Ransier.
Saying the name put a twist in his guts. The betrayal. The failure.
Well, not like Sir Ransier. I want to be good, though. I want to be right.
Nezzy was a good listener, paying close attention to him, and Lachlan realized that he hadn't talked this much to her since they'd met. Don't be so hard on yourself, she said. It's easy to get something wrong when you're in danger.
Lachlan hung his head. It wasn't the danger that caused the problem. It was me.
It was my faith that failed.
Ever since Edgewater and Sir Ransier, I believed in the Order of the Sacred Gauntlet and in my master. Now I have no master, and I don't even know if he acted against the Order's wishes. Maybe he's a traitor, or maybe the whole Order is in the wrong. They might be. Ransier was in charge, after all, so I can't believe in the Order anymore. Without my faith, I'm nothing but a mediocre swordsman and a terrible archer.
For a long time, they walked silently.
She knows I'm no good, Lachlan thought.
He hadn't known Nezzy very long, but he knew she was a good person, as sure as he knew anything. She always tried to be kind.
If she can't find anything to say, it must be because she thinks there's something bad in me. And maybe there is. I would have followed Ransier to the last battle in the world, and he turned out to be terrible. Did he know something about me? That I would go bad just like he did?
The squire felt worse than ever. But then Nezzy spoke again. The power of druids comes from nature, but the way we draw power determines what we can do with it. I can heal some things, and I can help things grow or ask nature to do something for me. Dark druids' magic can suck the life out of nature to give themselves power, like how the dross are made. It's all the same power source, but we choose what we do with it. Maybe you need to believe that you're doing the right thing.
Lachlan turned it over in his mind. Sir Ransier had faith in Orlam, but he had used the sacred power for evil. Lachlan had followed him and believed in him until Edgewater, but he wouldn't have lifted a finger against Shelsani or Gorson, even if his master had commanded him to.
Maybe it wasn't the faith or himself that was wrong. Maybe it was Sir Ransier's choices that had led him down the wrong path.
And when faced with a choice between trying to follow his master and trying to help people, Lachlan had chosen the right path. He was sure of it. He'd been so focused on Nezzy's words that he hadn't even responded, and she must have thought he was angry because she said,
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be telling you what to think. I don't know what you're going through.
Lachlan looked at the elf girl with a little half-smile. It's okay. I think you might be right. And anyway, it's good to have someone to talk to. It helps a lot.
Thanks.
Nezzy nodded, and they left it at that. They kept walking quietly together for a long time, and Lachlan slowly realized that he did feel better. At least a little. He had followed Sir Ransier so long that he'd stopped thinking of him as a man.
In his mind, the paladin was the Order of the Sacred Gauntlet, and his word was truth. It was scary to think that he'd been so wrong about his teacher, but it also felt good to know that he could decide what was right. Another hour passed, the group walking as quickly as they could without making much noise, and then the halfling stopped, motioning for everyone to crouch down. They all gathered together, getting in close so that they could whisper without being heard. Ahead, Lachlan could see the cart was stopped. The Okar were surrounding it, spears ready even as they rested. Their dark fur and curled horns seemed to bristle.
"This is our chance," Gothak said.
Waxham nodded. "We all know what we're doing, right? Nezzy and Harks, stay together and do what you can from a distance. Gothak and I will move straight in. Lachlan, you've got to get close enough to take the shot. Make sure you hit it this time." They all nodded, but Lachlan said, "No." "What?" Wax asked. "You helped make this plan," said Harks.
"Well, I'm changing it. I'll go with Gothak. I'm a better swordsman than an archer. I wanted to take the shot to prove I could, for my pride," he said,
and then held his bow out to Waxham.
"Saving the little ones, though, that's more important than my pride.
You say you can make it, I believe you. Wax, you take the shot." Waxham hesitated a moment, then accepted the bow, along with the few remaining arrows.
"I'll make it," they said.
"Thank you." Lachlan looked around the group.
"This is it," he said. "We can do this."
He didn't know for sure if they could. The plan was a little crazy, but Lachlan found that he believed they could. It would have to be good enough. Chapter 6. Waxham crept through the forest, silent as a shadow. Gods, it felt good to have a bow in their hand again. The war for the Swallowed Kingdom had prepared them for this. Countless days and nights scouting the elves' movements, tracking them through the trees and the mountains and their overgrown cities. The Okar were quick and stealthy with their fur, but they were as loud as keening loot hounds compared to the elves Waxham had fought against. The halfling flanked around the side of the place where the Okar had stopped. They had to stay outside the outer circle of guards. If they were caught, or if the guards heard them too soon, the cart would take off and the little ones would be lost again. Wax climbed a tree and found a vantage point where they could see the cart from behind some brass oak leaves. They had chosen the spot because the sunlight would be coming from behind, making Wax hard to see even for keen eyes. If the Okar couldn't see well, they'd never be able to spot Wax. They'd just be a shadow among shadows. Harks and Nezzy had taken the other flank. Lachlan and Gothak were crawling through the undergrowth, directly behind the cart, near the path. In another minute or two, Nezzy would loudly snap a dry stick. That would be the signal. Wax focused their attention on the cart, picking where their shots should go. Two of the ropes that tied the cart to the Thunder Beast were threaded through long wooden arms jutting forward from the cart. There was a third rope in the middle, and all three fed through a metal ring before running up to the harness on the big beast. It should be enough to cut two of the ropes, but Wax knew that they would have to be ready to try for all three. For the plan to work, the cart full of the little Frosker had to stay put when the Thunder Beast started moving. One Okar sat on the beast's back, ready to get the cart going at a moment's notice. Around the cart, the Okar who weren't on guard duty were resting. Two of them sat by a small fire, cooking something. Others lay stretched out on the ground, relaxed, talking or sleeping. One of the Okar was sitting up, his back against a tree, his armor removed and a thick, dirty bandage encircling his ribs. "That must be the one that Gothak demolished," Wax thought. "He'll be feeling that for a while." The Tads and Tasses were all in the cart, their hands tied together with long strands of vine. Some were crying, while a few munched on whatever scraps the guards had given them. There was one Frosker who looked older than the rest, but not old enough to be an adult. He sat with his shoulders hunched forward, looking completely lost,
but two of the little ones had fallen asleep with their heads on his lap. He must feel safe to them, at least compared to the horror of being captured. Wax felt anger rise up in themself. These Okar don't know who they're dealing with, they thought, but they will. They tested the draw on the bow. It was big, sized for a human knight, but Wax's arms were surprisingly strong. They had grown up pulling a bow, and a harder draw meant a further shot. A harder shot. A deadly shot. The halfling heard movement near the trail and caught a glint of metal. It had to be Gothak's clockwork arm. That's them, Wax thought. Right where they should be. But just then, one of the Okar guards started moving in that direction. He was patrolling, and if he kept going the way he was now, he'd stumble right into Gothak and Lachlan. Wax readied an arrow when they heard a loud snap further away. That was the signal. The guard looked toward the cart, then took off running toward the sound, away from Gothak and Lachlan. He hadn't seen them. All of a sudden, Gothak and Lachlan sprang up from their hiding spots. They didn't draw their weapons, but instead each pulled out a horn from the thunder beast Gothak had hunted. Nezzy had shown them how to cut off the tip and carve a small hole, and when they brought the horns to their lips and blew, the horns sounded mighty blasts. The guards closest to the noise tumbled to the ground, clutching their ears. All the Okar were stunned by this sound attack. Their delicate hearing couldn't take it. Nezzy's song had been right after all. Wax turned their eyes to the cart. The half-giant and the paladin were still blowing on their horns as fast as they could take breaths, and many of the Okar were still unable to react, including the beast driver. Waxham took a deep breath and readied the bow. With a fluid motion, they drew and fired at the rope on the left. The shot was on the mark, cutting the rope with a deft slice. Wax was already firing a second arrow before the first had hit, and the rope on the right fell away too. Part of the harness fell and landed on the foot of the thunder beast. The creature bellowed its coughing roar and started to run. The driver was taken by surprise and fell out of the saddle, slamming into the mud. The ropes on either side were swinging free, but the middle rope still held, and it was enough to drag the cart along behind the beast. It jerked back and forth as it picked up speed, and the frenzied, frightened Froskers inside started screaming. Wax could see that it would only be a few seconds before the cart crashed over. This is it, Wax thought. They aimed, raised the bow a little to account for the distance, and fired. They felt as if their whole being had been transferred into the arrow. They could almost feel the air rushing past as the arrow tipped down, gaining speed as it dropped. If it was too high, it would hit the thunder beast and enrage it even more. Too low, and the arrow might drop right into the cart and hurt one of the little ones. The arrow slashed in the sun and cut the rope just in front of the metal ring. The cart tipped forward and skidded to a stop, but the thunder beast trampled away, free. Lachlan and Gothak continued to blow their horns, driving back the Okar. A few of the guards twisted and hurled their spears blindly towards the pair. "Look out!" Wax yelled from the tree, but Lachlan was already acting. He raised his shield, still blowing the horn, and a rippling wall of blue light spread before them. The spears froze in the air and then fell harmlessly to the ground. From the far side of the path, there was a flash of flame and a crackle of lightning. Harks and Nezzy were pushing the Okar back. Most of the Okar broke and ran, but one stepped forward. It was the bandaged one that Gothak had wounded earlier. Clearly bent on vengeance, he had jammed his gloves into his ears. Teeth gritted, he hefted his spear and charged at the pair. Wax took one of the few remaining arrows and let it fly. It whipped through the air and sank into the Okar's good leg, dropping the brute to his knees with a shout of pain. Gothak looked up and gave Wax a friendly wave. Waxham waved back and slid down the tree to join their friends.
The other Okar had disappeared, stumbling after the Thunder Beast with their hands still clapped to their ears. Nezzy and Gothak were at the cart, working to free the Tads and Tasses from the vines. Wax joined Lachlan and Harks as they kicked away the falling Okar's weapon and tied his hands behind his back. They noticed that the creature didn't have the long fangs that they had seen when it attacked Gothak. There was some kind of mouthguard in the dirt at its feet, and the fangs were attached to that. Harks ground the fangs into the mud under her boot heel. The sorceress was fuming, standing rigid without speaking, and Wax could actually feel the heat coming off of her. She opened her mouth, likely to shout, but Lachlan spoke first. "Where were you taking them?" The creature looked dully at the ground and spit. "I said, where?" Lachlan asked again, raising the horn to his lips. The creature cringed away and started to talk. His voice was weak and raspy.
"We have a camp. Another day's ride to the north. We were supposed to meet the boss there and turn the little ones over to him. We didn't hurt them," he said, rather sadly.
"Oh, you didn't hurt them? You just tied them up and dragged them through the woods." Harks's voice must have been loud enough to bother the creature. It closed its eyes and moaned softly.
"Since that doesn't hurt, how about I light your fur on fire and you can run until you put it out?"
Lachlan put a hand on the sorceress's shoulder, trying to calm her. Wax saw it wasn't going to work. "Hey, Hothead," Wax said gently. "Let's leave him to the squire for now, yeah? We can go help the big guy and Nezzy with the little ones."
Wax gestured toward the cart where the Frosker were thronging around Nezzy, all chattering and piping. Harks nodded, and they made their way over.
"That stupid horse thing? I can't believe he... ugh!"
Harks was still angry enough that she couldn't finish a sentence.
"Look at it this way. We won, right? We got the little ones free. That's the important thing."
Wax smiled a little. Gothak was bent down, one knee out in front of him, and the little Tads and Tasses were jumping down off the back of the cart, onto his knee, and then down onto the ground to get free. Some of them were climbing happily back up the other side of the cart so they could do it again. A little voice rang out over the noise of all the kids.
"Hey, it's the other wizard girl!"
Wax turned to see a Tass, shorter than themselves, charging at Harks. She got pretty close and then bounded into the air, wrapping her thin arms around Harks. The sorceress was startled and almost fell over, but she managed to keep herself upright.
"Gwip, it's really you?"
Harks's anger had washed away in a wave of joy at finding her little friend safe. Tears stood in her eyes, and she hugged the little pink and blue Tass tight to her chest.
"Uh-huh, it's me! We came out of the cave with Osla, the other one!"
She flapped her arm vaguely at the throng of other Frosker.
"Then they caught us, but I sprayed one of them with so much water that he tripped and fell in the mud, and one of the other ones stepped on his leg, and he said, 'Watch it, you stupid!'"
Nezzy had come up behind Gwip to listen, and now she interrupted.
"Wait, Osla? You've seen Osla?"
Gwip nodded enthusiastically.
"He said he'd teach me how to control my water powers if I would stop spraying the other kids, but my friend Esha called me a turtle face, so I had to."
Wax and Harks grinned as Nezzy stepped closer, reaching for Gwip's hand.
"Osla, where did you see Osla?"
"I told her. We came out of the cave with Osla, and..."
"Can you show us where the cave is?"
"No, I don't know how to get there."
Gwip pointed to the tallest Frosker there, the one Wax had seen on the cart.
"But Blunna does. It's only a little way, and it's a huge cave, and you have to swim into it, but then you come up, and it's a beach, and it's so pretty, and the cave has all these pointy things, and there's a place where the turtles come up, and there's all these big seaweed things that grow like trees, and it's just really nice."
Gwip kept talking, but Wax wasn't listening anymore. Nezzy had started making a salve from some plants to ease the Frosker's numerous scrapes and cuts and rope burns. Lachlan had left the Okar tied to a tree and was saying something to Gothak. Harks was laughing. Pure happiness and relief and the hilarity of Gwip's gabbling. Lachlan and Gothak came over to the rest of the group. Gothak had a Frosker child clinging to each of his legs and another one swinging from his metal arm. Lachlan was smiling.
Wax went to hand the bow to him. "Thanks for trusting me," they said. The squire took it, then grabbed Wax's outstretched hand and shook it. "That shot was amazing," he said. "Shots, I should say. You weren't kidding." He handed the bow back to Wax. "You should hang on to this. We might need you to use it again."
"Are you sure?" Wax asked.
"Oh, I'm sure," Lachlan said. "I've got my sword and shield, and I'm rubbish with it anyway."
"I could teach you," Wax said, and then quickly added, "if you'd like."
"Yeah," Lachlan said, blushing a little. "That would be great."
"Oh, you too,"
Nezzy said, and then grabbed them in a tight hug. The halfling just stood there a moment and then hugged the elf girl back.
"We did it. We couldn't have done it without you. You realized what the horns were referring to. Your song was right in the end."
"It was a team effort," Nezzy said. "And those bow shots, you were amazing."
Wax felt a lump in their throat. They swallowed hard.
"You're amazing, Nezzy. I wouldn't even be here if you hadn't gotten me out of that prison cart."
Wax remembered the rising water, the roaring flames, the pitworm chewing at the bars with its crushing teeth and endless, hungry gullet.
"You saved me."
"We all save each other," Hark said, Gwip riding piggyback. "It's what we do."
Gothak spoke, his low voice strong enough to cut through the chatter of all the young ones.
"We should move. We won, but they're still out there."
"I could get us back to the caves," said Blunnick, the older Frosker.
He was tall for his kind, with red and yellow whorl patterns on his skin.
"But it's not too far, I think. We just need to get to the river, and then we can follow it down from there."
"Let's go then," Hark said. "Last one there's a bugbear's uncle." The Frosker Tads and Tasses cheered and laughed, and Wax smiled again. They looked at their friends, thinking that they were as trusty a group as any they had ever fought beside. The halfling would help them with their quest, help them stop the warlock. And then, maybe, just maybe, the group would help break their family, the halfling army, out of that elven prison. "After all," Waxham Whistlewood thought, "I still have another prince to kill."
The end. For now. Today's story was The Conclusion of The Wilderwood, Book 2, an original fantasy serial co-written for you by Daniel Hines and Joseph Montebello, and performed for you by me, Amanda Weldon. If you love The Wilderwood, you're in luck. There will be more installments coming later this year. If you would like to support Stories Podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, get ad-free episodes and more at patreon.com/stories, check out all of our merch available at storiespodcast.com/shop, follow us on Instagram at Stories Podcast, or simply tell your friends about us. Thanks for listening!
Hey, Prime members! You can listen to Stories Podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today! Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus Kids in Apple Podcasts. Grown-ups, before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.